Just want to first acknowledge my co-author, Andrew Ripplinger. What I'm going to talk about today is an HIV prevention intervention we've been developing in Kenya for the past several years, and to talk to you a little bit about what the theoretical basis was behind this and how we developed it. And we'll go from there. So I have nothing to disclose. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about gender norms, first of all, in terms of HIV and AIDS pandemic. And I think that this is something that I do work both domestically and internationally. And it seems like in the global arena, we talk a lot more about gender transformative interventions and the role of gender in HIV prevention, I think, than we do sometimes here in the U.S. And the WHO, as I'm sure a lot of you know, has called for gender transformative interventions to really look at transforming gender roles and norms that promote HIV sexual risk in a variety of populations. And one thing we've seen in a lot of different countries in sub-Saharan Africa is that male gender norms and expectations of what it means to be a man within the context of a lot of countries actually promotes a lot of risk. It promotes multiple partner sex, impregnation, you're not really a man until you've impregnated a woman yet, and then a lot of sexual violence as well. So in order to really address some of these issues, you know, we need to continue, I think, to have programs to focus on girls and women, but we also need to focus on the other side of the equation. Because as we know, a lot of the epidemic is fueled by heterosexual transmission in a lot of parts of sub-Saharan Africa, and especially in Kenya where we work. And so if we're really going to try and address gender transformative interventions, we really need to look at both sides, both the male gender role development and then the female gender role development. So the work we do is really working with men and boys to challenge gender role expectations and what it means to be a man. So our work is based in the work of Paulo Freire and critical consciousness, and you know, we could spend all day talking about Paulo Freire, so I won't do that. But critical consciousness, for folks who aren't real familiar with it, I mean, here's one definition that just kind of gives a brief snapshot of learning to think critically about accepted ways of thinking and feeling, discerning the hidden interests and underlying assumptions and framing options. And, you know, according to Freire's work, you know, part of what keeps people oppressed and marginalized is that they don't have an awareness that they're oppressed and marginalized. And, you know, if you look at Freire's work with liberatory education and the work he did in Brazil, you know, he taught people how to read so that people could be aware that they were being oppressed and they were being marginalized. And so in order for people to change their conditions, they have to first be aware of the ways in which the oppression it permeates every part of their life and all that they do. And, you know, when talking about youth, you know, critical consciousness is not really kind of activated until youth have this awareness and they understand the different ways in which the multiple societal forces and influences around them are impacting the way they view themselves, the way they view gender, the way they view their sex partners and everyone else. So critical consciousness in health promotion. So there's been some folks have talked about critical consciousness in the health promotion field, and it's been used in a lot of other areas outside of HIV. So people have used it in different ways in, you know, all these different areas: breast cancer screening, breastfeeding, oral health, self-care education, training nurse educators, mental health, patient education, reproductive health. But when we look at the HIV field, we really have not incorporated critical consciousness in HIV prevention in a very systematic way. So when we started doing this work in Kenya, and I do domestic work with critical consciousness as well, and trying to find other folks that are using it, it's people using like elements of it here and there, but it really a systematic approach has not really occurred a whole lot. So what we're trying to do is to look at using critical consciousness in helping youth to look at their gender norms, their gender roles, and to look at the ways in which they view themselves as sexual beings. So the program I'm going to talk about is called AMCA, and AMCA kind of has a double meaning. So AMCA in Kiswahili means to rise up, and so that's an image of young men rising up and taking control of their lives and their communities. And then it also, the acronym is Awakening Men for Knowledge and Action. I love acronyms. I can spend hours and hours just creating them. So if you have a tough acronym you want to come up with, just ask me and I'll whip something up in a short time. So a little bit about AMCA. Our focus is really on primary prevention of HIV in rural Kenya. But you know, for a lot of you folks, I'm sure, do global work, realize that you can't just do HIV prevention. I mean, there's so many other contextual factors we deal with, so we do deal with a lot of different issues. This was really a collaborative intervention development with young men from Thigio in Kenya. It's a small rural community outside of Nairobi. And a little bit about how this came about. I've been working in Kenya since about 2004, mostly doing capacity building work around HIV prevention. Not so much really focused on research, but really more capacity building for health promotion. And what happened is one of my doctoral students was doing, for her dissertation, she created a mother-daughter intervention that was being delivered in the community that we work in. And so I was at a community event. I go there about 3 times a year, and I've gotten to know the people in the community really well. So we were at a social event and just kind of hanging out and talking, and several mothers came up to me and they said, "Oh, we love what Jessica's done. It's a great intervention. Thank you so much. Thank you so much." And then they cornered me and they said, "What about the men?" And I was like, "Okay, well, what about the men?" And they said, "Well, our boys need something. They're using alcohol, they're having sex, they're beating the girls, you know, all these things are going on. You need to do something for our men." So what I did is I got a group of young men together that I knew from working in the community, and we actually sat under a tree for quite some time and just talked about what we needed to do. And so we did a lot of, we have been doing some formative work there around a general HIV prevention program we were developing. But I sat and talked with these, you know, young men, went back to Chicago, pulled together some different resources, went back to them. We sat under a tree again, and actually a tea hut the second time, and just really talked through how we needed to develop this and what we needed to do in order to make this work. So what we came up with is an interactive workshop that's focused on both individual and community level factors that impact HIV risk and protective behaviors. And the focus areas for the critical consciousness element are unprotected sex, multiple partner sex, substance use, and sexual violence. So the technique that we use is something, a critical consciousness coaching technique that we have adapted from the original work of Rod Watts, who actually used to be a colleague, well, he's still a colleague, but used to be a fellow faculty member with me at DePaul years ago. And he developed this coaching strategy that he used with urban youth on the south side of Chicago around issues of misogynistic kind of thoughts, behaviors, and gender violence. And what you do in this technique is you show a stimulus material, and then you go through these sets of 5 questions in a small group discussion. So what did you see or hear? And it's just basically kind of identifying what the stimulus is. What does it mean to you? Getting more at interpretation. Why do you think that? So helping them figure out why they're interpreting the way they're interpreting it. How do you think and feel about what you saw or heard? And this is more the affective, the emotional component. And then the last part, which is really critical, is what would you do to make it better? Because part of critical consciousness is not just not being aware of it, but then taking social action to change it. If you're just aware of all the horrible things that are happening to you, it can actually make it worse because you're going to just be depressed all the time. But if you feel like you can do something to make a change, that's one of the critical elements. And Frere and other folks who have used this technique in other areas talk about the importance of the action-reflection cycle, where you have to really make sure that, you know, you reflect, you act, then you come back, you reflect again, and you act. So it needs to be an iterative process. So what we do is, these are a couple of the different stimulus materials we've used for our critical consciousness work. And really, the ANPA that I'm presenting, we've been really working on developing this program over a long period of time because we wanted to make sure it was really developed from the voices of young men, not from us sitting in a university in the U.S. So really what I'm presenting is our formative work that's been occurring over a period of actually almost 2 years. So this is one of the advertisements. It's from a magazine called Atom, who's the only men's magazine, kind of like GQ in the U.S., but it's actually now out of business, so it's not there anymore. There is an East African men's magazine. But here's one on skin bleaching. And so we use this as one of the first stimulus materials that we use, and you go through that coaching technique with those 5 prompts. Here's also another one about alcohol and kind of showing the ways in which alcohol and sex are linked. So you've got this attractive guy, his cufflink you can't really see says sex. So it's pretty obvious, you don't have to interpret that too much, right? And then the beer, it was a really great process. When we first did this, we had no idea if this was going to work. It's been done a lot again with other areas, and I'm doing it domestically with both youth living with HIV and then also black, gay, bisexual men who are negative. And When we started showing these images for the guys in the rural communities here in Kenya, they just really responded well to that. So then also another image about beer, truly yours, truly Kenyan, kind of, there's a strong sense of nationalism in many parts of Kenya and really tying that alcohol into that nationalism. Also magazine articles, here's one about greener pastures, so about cheating on your girlfriend or your wife. I'm going to speed up a little bit because I think my time is coming near and in. Kiss me quick. Oh, it's not. Okay, I can just chill. All right. My watch is fast. All right, so kiss me quick, squeeze me slow. Again, the relationship between alcohol and sex. And these things are everywhere when you start to realize them. Another thing that we did is we look at different stimulus materials. And we've gone back and talked to the young men who have been in the program, and we've asked them about, how they've been impacted by this. We also asked them about new stimulus materials because, these are really poor rural areas, so you can't always use different types of materials. So one thing is that we had youth act out role plays, and this is something that hasn't been really used domestically in some of the critical consciousness work, but the young men actually liked that. So we had two guys, and they had scripts, and then they act out issues related to gender-based violence and substance use. We also did audio clips. So we recorded, we worked with young men from the communities to actually record them and to do that. And they thought that was really cool too, because then, you get to hear yourself on the audio tape and other people get to hear you as well. So we talked about issues around unprotected sex and multiple sexual partners. And we had a lot of fun making those. I was going to show, have you listened to some of these, but I had to do a lot of cutting. The presentation was originally about 45 minutes long. So, all right. So we also watch music videos from a Kenyan hip hop artist called Bamboo. There's one called Snitch, which shows a lot of negative messages about drugs and substance use. There's actually a more positive one, Mother Africa. We tried to balance it some to show some positive aspects. There's also a popular Kenyan TV show called Cobra Squad. So we show little clips from Cobra Squad that again show links between violence toward women and masculinity. These are some of the guys from our group. They always tell us, make sure you show our picture to lots of people. So I'm showing your picture to lots of people. So in our first group, we had 36 young men, ages 14 to 23, did an immediate post-assessment, then the 3 and the 9 month follow-up. And just to highlight, we weren't looking at outcomes at 3 and 9. We were doing more process work because, again, we really wanted to do a slow and gradual development process. The intervention lasts about 4.5 hours. The main focus areas were socialization and oppression, critical consciousness coaching technique, individual plans for behavior change, and then community action plans. And Barack Obama is, still a very positive figure, and everyone's Barack Obama's cousin, even though they're from totally different ethnic groups in different parts of the country, but they're still his cousin. And so we use that to talk about him as a community organizer. Some of the things from the immediate post on a 4-point scale, looking at acceptability, feasibility, 3.48 to 3.69, so high. Qualitative data confirmed the information was relevant to their health and well-being. They talked about excitement and interest in the workshop. Some of the voices, I've learned, first of all, to be proud of myself as a black person. I've learned that education is the key. Without education, you cannot get anywhere. I can say, yes, we can. You can see a little Obama influence there. With knowledge, we can make the world a better place. The part I like the most about the advertisements, I've learned that we should not take advertisements in the products and start by using them without studying the consequences. At 3 months, we went back and talked to these guys again. So after you thought about this some more and you've kind of tried to enact this, and they would bring back their individual and community action plans, we would ask them again, so what do you think about this this intervention? What do you think about some of these strategies? So a couple of quotes. It was extremely challenging to me. I felt a victim, so it was challenging to me. I see the dress. I want to dress that way. You see the beer. I want to be take it to be masculine, But it's just lies, because if I drink that beer, I won't be masculine. I won't be sexy. It's all fiction. Another, on this issue of oppression, if you look back on the era of Dr. Martin Luther King, he said he has a dream that one day the children that are black and white, they won't be judged by the skin of color, but their integrity. So I find that we Africans sometimes oppress ourselves, We think that we are not smart, We think that there are some things that we can't do. So after that topic, I realized that we do have that potential. It's a very empowering statement. In 9 months, going back, thinking about having them think about the different aspects of what we did and how much this has been able to help them, even past 9 months past doing the intervention. Again, all very high ratings in terms of the quantitative. We did a focus group at this point with about 14 of the participants. So some of the comments from them. Now we can determine what it's all about, and now I will be able to think about that advertisement, maybe about beer, and be able to reason behind it. That topic made me realize I don't need sex to gain favor from my friends. It has helped me now because even telling the kids about critical consciousness, not everything is good. They usually go after what is attractive to their eyes, but not what's, they don't look at the consequences. So using that can make them look at an object or thing critically. So some of the conclusions. I think that one thing that we've definitely seen is that there's a lot of promise of using this technique for primary prevention. We're also using it for secondary prevention domestically, and also other health promotion interventions in both domestic and international settings. And I think the thing that's nice about the critical consciousness coaching technique is that you choose the stimulus materials depending on your population and your community and the ways in which they're delivered. So if videos are appropriate, use videos. If role plays are appropriate, use role plays. It's whatever stimulus materials are relevant to the population, and then the delivery format is whatever appropriate for that population as well. I think that it can really work on looking at social and gender norms that promote HIV-related risk behavior. So you can look at the ways in which young people receive so many messages about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, that they don't even think and process that. And it's pretty phenomenal, like talking to these young men over time, to really see the ways in which they feel like they were so clueless before about the ways that they've been manipulated by media, the ways they've been manipulated by others. Incorporating critical consciousness into HIV-related interventions for diverse populations is a promising strategy. We can look at historical, political, social, and cultural factors that serve to promote oppression among marginalized populations. I just want to end with a story. So one thing I love about doing this work is you get to listen to a lot of stories and tell a lot of stories. And so we had one guy who was in our group that when we came back, I think it was at the 3 month point, before we got started, he just said, well, can I tell you a story first? So I'm like, sure, yeah, let's hear your story. So he said, once there was this village, and in this village, over in the corner, there was this this old statue that was really ugly and dirty and nasty, and there was like just crap all over and garbage, and no one ever looked at it. It was just this eyesore that was in the corner of the village. And one day there was a great rain, and the great rain came, and when the great rain came, it washed all the dirt away from this great statue. And underneath that great statue was a beautiful, shining piece of art and a work of art. And that work of art then was brought into the middle of the village, and it was the pride of the village. And he said, I am that statue. That's what this has done. This has washed away the negativity. It's washed away the dirt, and it's really made me become a shining part of my community. Thank you very much.